your applications to be part of our on-air team.
And welcome. This is Latinx.
Welcome to the Soul Kitchen. It is I, your resident chef, Big Eddie G.
Join your favorite voices on 88.5 FM, WMNF.org, and our HD channels. If you've always dreamed of being on the radio,
I would love to be on the radio.
Now's your chance.
Join your listening supported radio station, WMNF.
Apply under the programming tab at WMNF.org.
Hello, my faithful listeners, and welcome to Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. And keep in mind that great callers make for a great show, so Clark is waiting to handle your calls, and you're invited to participate in our discussions today, or if you have any medical questions, you can call 813-239-9663 or send an email to dj@wmnf.org. You can also text us at 813-433-0885. Well, good morning, Dr. Fred. What tasty medical treats do you have for us today in your box of bonbons?
Well, good morning, Bill. I'm really excited to talk a bit about some long-haul COVID situations.
Great
Looks
topic.
Like we're really into it, aren't we?
Deep.
We don't see it going away very soon. And so what we're seeing, though, is people that are having these symptoms post-infection. There are some evidence out there that some of the cells still contain some of the SARS-CoV-2 RNA. So maybe there's potentially a smoldering infection, which is an interesting thought that came up because some of the people talking about the long haulers have actually noticed that the people that have gotten a vaccination after getting it, some people have actually had resolution of the long haul symptoms, but some people have actually gotten worse. So it's really hard to tell what's actually really happening. But just to understand the long haul, the symptoms are all over the place because the virus does go all over the place. And one of the most important ones that we've noticed is the brain and sensation of smell and taste. These are often called brain fog, but a lot of people are getting anxiety, depressive symptoms, even psychosis with delusional thinking, paranoia, and other things like that because the brain's inflamed. And when the brain's inflamed, it dysfunctions. The entire nervous system is connected, though. So your eyes can have sensitivity to light. Your ears can have ringing and hearing loss, even some inner ear vertigo, spinning, dizziness symptoms. But really, the place where the SARS-CoV-2 hits first and foremost and affects most organs through the vasculature. That's the really important thing. And there are these receptors called the angiotensin receptor. And the SARS-CoV-2 attaches to that receptor to enter the cell and do some damage. And that's all lining the vascular system. So when that happens, the cells lining the vascular system get damaged, and then they get sticky, and that's when we get these mini clots forming. Disseminated intravascular coagulation is a big term for having many mini clots, little tiny clots in the very smallest vessels, slowing up your blood flow. And so it's like it's thick blood. And so everything goes more slowly. You don't clear toxins as easily. You don't do good metabolism. In fact, it makes things sluggish. So you can get some sluggish heart function, a little heart failure, possibly chest pains, shortness of breath. And you can get inflammation of your liver, your pancreas, your kidneys, your gastrointestinal tract. Everywhere in the body can have symptoms of inflammation. And so the best thing you can do is work on anti-inflammatory measures. Some of those are really simple. Get sleep, get water, and get good food. You want to make sure you do the standard stuff I always talk about, that foundational nutrition is so critical. But then we really want to boost everybody's systems to function better. So to empower the blood cells that eat up the junk, that clean out the spleen from the antibody antigen or antibody virus complexes that make the blood thick. We want to boost those macrophages and monocytes. And vitamin C, 500 milligrams twice a day, can be really helpful. Omega-3 fatty acids. Now, when you look at omega-3 fatty acids, many of the capsules are 1,000 milligrams. But you have to read the back label and see exactly how much is in the capsule that's actually omega-3. Because you can have 1,000 milligrams of fish oil, but only 300 milligrams of omega-3. So read your labels, because you want to get 4,000 milligrams. There's clinical research that shows that 4,000 milligrams of omega-3s is actually turning back this inflammation. And another thing that helps both with the brain and the white blood cells is melatonin. For prevention or early treatment, start with 2 milligrams. But if you've got brain fog or if you get COVID, really, actually, you should raise it from 2 to 10 milligrams. If you can tolerate 10 milligrams, it's really highly protective for the brain. This is just baseline stuff. And I really think that also vitamin D is really important to help keep the system running well. So at least 4,000 units, if not 5 or 10,000, for the time where you're trying to recover. Other anti-inflammatories that I really like are curcumin or turmeric extract, 95%, a really potent one, and quercetin. Quercetin stabilizes your blood vessels. You should be taking that for prevention of the inflammatory symptoms, so that if you were to get COVID, you would actually already be mitigating with some of this helpful material, but also ramp it up 2-3 times a day if you get infected, and keep it at that level if you've still got symptoms afterwards. So other things that are happening, the body's irritated, so you can actually activate your mast cells, which are the irritating inflammatory allergy cells. So you want to try and consider a low histamine diet. And that means avoiding fermented foods and tomatoes and aged cheeses and things like that. You can look up a low histamine diet online. But also if you're having histamine symptoms, stuffy nose, that kind of thing, itchy eyes, even itchy skin rashes, a combination of a type 1 antihistamine, the non-sedating like loratadine or pexofenadine, but also a type 2, which works on the gut, especially if you're having gut symptoms with this, because it cuts down the histamine in your gut, and that's famotidine or Pepcid. And then there are other things that seem to be helping. I've worked with several networks of very forward-thinking clinicians, and one of the things that many are beginning to use is low-dose naltrexone. It may help with the inflammation. It's not a cure-all, but it can help. some are actually using a antidepressant called fluvoxamine. Fluvoxamine actually kind of helps to reset the brain, because fluvoxamine stimulates serotonin receptors and get reconnection going. If lungs are really a problem, corticosteroid therapy, inhaled corticosteroid or oral prednisone can both be useful, but you don't want to do it forever. You want to do it for a short term and see if that helps. Also, because we have this consideration that there is a virus ongoing, the only potential treatment that is available, not recommended by WHO or CDC, but recommended by a forward-thinking group of academic clinicians that actually research the data, and they think that a short course of ivermectin, if you're still having post-COVID syndrome, would be a good choice. I've also treated post-COVID with hydroxychloroquine, and have had some success. One patient got better quickly, but shortly thereafter, she started getting chest pain. And we were confused by that because her cytokine panel, that's a blood test that looks at all the inflammatory chemicals of the immune system that are actually part of this cytokine storm called COVID-19, her numbers had gone down, and then they went back up. And it turns out that she actually has, or actually experienced, a recrudescence of shingles. Shingles looks the same on blood tests of the COVID cytokine panel as COVID does. So it's really interesting that that actually was her issue, it seems, and she started to get some recovery by using some treatment for that. And I hydroxychloroquine just didn't cut anymore, but it's not a treatment for shingles either. So this is a very complex situation. And I think we could avoid some post-COVID syndrome if we could relax our attitude about what can and can't be used. Because if somebody gets COVID after they've had an injection, if they've had their inoculation and they're supposedly immune, they can still get it. We know that. It's happening. That's not a secret. But why don't we treat those people with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine to try and reduce the inflammatory cascade, which is what is the cause of chronic COVID post syndrome. So I wish that we could have more discussion about the potential for therapy, because it's months away before the new Merck $700 treatment and the new Pfizer, who knows, $700 treatment for treating COVID is going to be available. They haven't even applied for emergency use. But we have two generic drugs on the market that seem to have effect. Why can't we just talk about this rationally in a public discourse and try it on some people? I understand that there is a study going to begin on prevention with ivermectin. However, my understanding is that both hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin need to be started within the first 5 days to have the most effect. And the New American study is going to take patients up until 10 days, still with mild symptoms. But I'm concerned that it's going to skew the results so that it won't look as positive, because we have to start early. As soon as you get a diagnosis, you should start on this so you can prevent chronic symptoms. That is my opinion. It is not the WHO's opinion. It is not a WMNF opinion. But it's the opinion of hundreds and hundreds of academic doctors that have actually done research and looked at these options. And it would be really nice to have an open, educational, scientific discussion in the public sphere so that we can actually really come to some conclusion about what we can do about the third world, because only 2% of the third world has been inoculated so far. With that said, I see that we're getting some emails, and I'm wondering if we have anybody on the phone yet, Bill.
Yes, we do. We've got Dave in Pasco, but I'm going to remind everybody that you're listening to Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa, and you're invited to join in on the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or sending an email, as the doctor alluded to dj@wmnf.org, and you can text us at 813-433-0885. And let's go to David. Hey, David.
Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Harvey.
Hi, David.
I've spoken with you before about this lymphedema problem I have.
Yes.
It's not getting any better. You mentioned the anti-inflammatory turmeric, or the, what was the other part, the name of it? Where can I find that, the 95%?
Most health food stores carry it. Many forward-thinking nutritional pharmacies do, and many functional medicine doctors have a pharmacy in their office.
And the doctor prescribed me tramadol for the pain because of the skin deterioration leading to, like,
yes,
cellulitis. Tramadol did nothing. And so they said, go see a pain management doctor, and he put me on Percocet, and I have not filled the prescription.
Great.
I'm scared of that stuff.
I would be too, because look, if you've got a chronic problem, treating it with a narcotic is not going to change that problem. So it's basically they're going to get you addicted to a narcotic.
Exactly.
It might be worthwhile to look into a doctor who would prescribe low dose naltrexone. That is a benefit both in a mild anti-inflammatory and also a mild painkiller. So that would be one option.
I tried ketoprofen, but they ran out of it. They don't have it anymore. I got it at my local Walgreens. And
maybe try a different pharmacy.
I have tried. I've tried everywhere. It's impossible to find. They only had 10 pills, and I tried it, so I didn't even really give it a fair shake. What about medical marijuana? What's the easiest and cheapest way for me to get medical marijuana?
Find a local doctor that is a certifying doctor, and get a card with the state, and then go to your local dispensary. There's lots of them around. It's really easy to do, and I would recommend that you do that. Have you tried topical CBD salve as yet?
No, I have not.
Have you tried oral CBD?
No, I haven't tried any of those.
Good. So while you're waiting for your visit with the certifying doctor and getting your card, because it's going to take you a month to go through the process, start on some CBD. I would recommend that you start with maybe about 10 milligrams of CBD orally a day. And you could even increase that as high as 100 milligrams as tolerated. That's very anti-inflammatory. And then rubbing CBD salve on the areas that bother you are it's really helpful for many people. So that would be a way to actually start intervening before you can get to the medical marijuana. But also look up a functional medicine doctor and get a full evaluation, because there could be other reasons that you have this pain and it could be fixed.
The leaking of the fluid is very annoying. The fluid leaks constantly out of my right leg. It soils the clothes, yes, the socks, the shoes, and it's got a strong odor to it. It's a lot of protein, they explained to me.
Yes. It's really a difficult condition.
It's affecting my employment.
Yes.
All right, I'll try some CBD products, and I'll see if I can get certified, because I don't want to be on opioids.
I agree. I would call a functional medicine doctor. We have lots of tools. There are lots of us around. Florida is very popular for functional medicine doctors, so you should be able to find one close to you.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
And we got James from Ruskin on the line now. We can go to him. Hey there, James.
Hello. Good morning. Good morning. I called in because y'all were talking about inflammation and that sort of thing. I hit about 20, 25 years ago. I got iritis and uveitis. They called it chronic and something else. It was really bad. I lost a lot of vision. I hit the wall on steroids. I was doing steroids in earnest 4 times a day, taking prednisone 4 times a day. I collapsed on the steroids, and when I got over that, they put me on a Imuran as a thioprene. And if people are seeing halos around lights and things, they need to get to the doctor pretty quick and get their eyes checked.
I thoroughly agree. Go ahead.
I was just curious why an immunosuppressant took over and was so much stronger and better than the steroids.
Oh, that is because they're totally different classes of medication. Steroids emulate what you got in your body. So prednisone or any of the other ones you might take orally or in your eyes are related to cortisone. Your body makes it. So it works with your natural processes. Imuran, that's chemotherapy. What it does is paralyze your white blood cells, probably kills a few of them. And so it's more effective because it's a much higher level toxin. It's a poison interfering with your own normal, natural immune process. But you have an autoimmune disease, and so you need to interfere with that. You're unable to get it under control.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with Reiter's syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. So I think one of the best things you can do to make sure that stays controlled is to look into a dietary change. The autoimmune protocol, Amy Myers AIP or Terry Walls WAHLS protocol, are both very good autoimmune treatment diets. They help lots of patients without doing anything else. That might be a way of actually finding that you don't need to take any more Imuran, but it would take a while to figure this out, and you have to be diligent with the diet. And one of the keys is you avoid gluten, dairy, and eggs permanently.
Wow,
it's a really hard diet to do, but I watch people stop their multiple sclerosis. They end their rheumatoid arthritis. Not everybody, but not everybody's exactly diligent with the diet. It's really freaking hard. So you got a lot of work to do if you want to try it. But you can get some coaching, really good coaching, if you go to a functional medicine doctor and get into a coaching program with them and their functional medicine nutritionist. Because it's all about transformation, and you can transform your life doing very simple things.
Oh, with my diet, I plot over my diabetes. But I'm curious
the paleo
what
type
HLA B27
diet.
Tissue type and Imuran would deal with COVID.
So, yeah, if you have diabetes, you can't take steroids. And if you have diabetes, you should be on either the AIP or the Walls diet, because there's no sugar, there's no grain, there's no dairy, and there's no egg. And so you really do well with getting your lipids controlled and your sugar controlled on this diet. So it'll cover a couple of different areas for you.
Yeah, I got my A1C down to 5.4.
Excellent. Are you using medication for that or just diet?
Diet.
Fantastic. I bet it would go down to about 5.1 if you did the autoimmune protocol diet.
I'm going to get to work on that. How does all this work with the HLA B27 tissue type and COVID?
So the HLA B27 tissue type is why you need to be on the special diet. But the interaction with COVID is actually not yet well defined. It's really hard to tell, but you're on immunosuppressive. You're still taking the Imuran?
Yes, I take two a day. I'm not up to the maximum dose yet.
Yeah, so Imuran actually is kind of like an anti-inflammatory treatment. So you may or may not actually have less intense COVID were you to acquire it, because you're already on something that suppresses that terrible immune response, which is COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that helped you, James.
Say again.
I hope that helps you, James.
Oh, it will. I'm going to get to work on another diet. And thank you for the help. And I got all my Pfizer shots, even the booster. So
very good. Stay safe.
I still wear my mask though. Thank
Mark,
you.
You're welcome.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right, and I got Bobby from Tampa on the line here.
Hello, Bobby.
Hello, Doctor. I missed you last week, man. But listen, I had a couple of things. First, all of the stuff that you talked about with long haul COVID, I have been saying that to people I talked to that had it, doctors, primary, and they look at you as if you're making it up, because mine is 9 months out, and I still feel like my brain isn't getting enough oxygen. I still get that confusion and so forth. I had a bout with anxiety, but you helped me with that with the magnesium glycinate. That has helped a lot.
Very good.
But one of the things I want to bring up real quick is I talked to you before about having a bout with vertigo, so I got to an ENT, and they said, well, it looks like Meniere's. So I gave them my medical profile and everything as best I could. What one of the doctors described is hydrochlorothiazide. I said, well, I'm already on lisinopril. How is that going to help? And he says, well, just try it, see if it, helps. Like if there's some inflammation in there that's causing the imbalance in your ear. Does that sound viable to you to just try it instead of going with the diet for anti-inflammatory?
So what doesn't sound viable is the description that he gave you. Because it's not about the inflammation. Hydrochlorothiazide is a water pill. And the concept for hydrochlorothiazide use, and it has been helpful in certain people, is that we dehydrate the inner ear. We have a supposition, it's a theory, that the inner ear is swollen from some inflammation. And yours may very well be from having the post-COVID syndrome. And so hydrochlorothiazide may actually drain that out a bit. On the other hand, if you have this in post-COVID syndrome, you have brain inflammation, so you need to be taking melatonin.
Melatonin. Hold on. I'm right. Leave me you.
Yes. Right. Melatonin, 10 milligrams, is part of the post-COVID protocol, and I've told you what the other parts are, and so I think you need to pay attention to that. And if you want to see a full protocol, go to the FLCCC Alliance website, FLCCC, and you can find the iRecover protocol. It's very comprehensive. I even use more stuff than is on there. But an antihistamine may help you, hydrochlorothiazide may help you, and the post-COVID recover protocol may help.
Cool.
Hope that works for you, Bobby.
All right. Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
You too.
Well, I do have somebody on the line here, Merrill, but I know we're stacking on up the emails as well. So if you want to address a couple of those.
Let me answer a few of them. So let's see. My husband was recently diagnosed with a heart murmur, and he'll be getting an echocardiogram. At the doctor's office, his blood pressure was high. At home, I gave him some coconut water, and his BP came down. This morning, it was 122 with a diastolic of 99. That's pretty high. He's on a diet to lower his sugar, and they're following that pretty well. Gloria wonders if this could be sleep apnea. And absolutely it could be. If he has snoring or startles himself awake at night, that's a good sign that he might have it. Dry mouth in the morning, feeling like you didn't sleep when you get up in the morning, those kind of things. I would definitely evaluate sleep apnea with an isolated, with diabetes in the background and high blood pressure. Those are two signs of potential sleep apnea. Dave asks, would selenium help with tiredness after thyroidectomy from cancer? I'm taking 125 micrograms of levothyroxine daily, which keeps me in a hyperthyroid state. I just had my first of four annual checkups, and there's no cancer in my body. That may help, but I think that the way you would know if it would help, you could try it. 200 micrograms is not a big dose, and many people take that. It's available at most health food stores. However, you may want to get a full thyroid panel, including a total T3 and a reverse T3 number. That will help to see if you're actually converting the T4 to T3. And also, because it's so tied in there, since you're post-thyroidectomy, I would also get an adrenal test, a salivary adrenal test, with a morning, noon, afternoon, and nighttime cortisol, so we can see if your adrenals are actually functioning, because that's really a big part of this, too. Do you need a good hormone workup with a good functional medicine doctor, Dave? Kay is asking, I wake up with my hands feeling swollen. They ache and are hard to bend. I have to exercise my fingers to get them to move. It goes away as the day goes on. Some days are worse than others. I wonder if this is happening because I eat salt. So salt may cause some swelling, but if it's a feeling of swelling, my guess is it's inflammation. So the first things I would do there is limit consumption of gluten, dairy, and eggs. And then at the same time, start taking some anti-inflammatories. You want to get 3,000 milligrams of omegas or 4,000 milligrams of omegas. Remember, read the back of the label and get omegas, not just total fish oil. You want to get, again, curcumin, 95% extract, and take one or two of those a day. Another very helpful anti-inflammatory is CBD. If you can get some CBD into you every day, my rheumatoid arthritis dose is about 50 milligrams to 100 milligrams a day, and I've watched people improve very nicely with that. There's a couple of things you could do to start with, and then also follow up with your primary or a functional medicine doctor to get a little bit more of a workup. Who do you have on the phone, Bill?
I've got Merrill from Dunedin, and they have a concern that the grandson's not interested in eating too many different types or too many foods. Hey there, Merrill.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Harding. I'm just really concerned because my grandson has a problem with textures, and he's not interested in eating most times, and he's underweight, and he doesn't drink very much. And I was wondering about a natural appetite stimulator. We've been reading about them, and you have to give them so many times during the day, some every 2 hours. And I just wondered if there was an easier way to go about getting him to eat. He's been to a nutritionist, and that was like 6 months ago. She just said, well, feed him more ice cream to put some weight on him.
That's a nutritionist? Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
I think we need to back up here a little bit. I don't want to treat symptoms here. So I don't want to give him an appetite suppressant because I don't know why he's having trouble. So a question. Okay. Is this a new behavior or is this a lifelong behavior?
He wasn't this way when he was a baby. I think it's been in the last few years.
And how old is he?
He's 8.
All right. So there's a condition that changes the way kids interact with the world. it's not one talked a lot about in general pediatrics. Your pediatrician may not know about this, but it's called PANDAS, P-A-N-D-A-S. And it's a neurologic, P as in Paul, A, N as in Nancy, D as in dog, A, S as in Sam. PANDAS.
Okay.
And that syndrome is associated with a streptococcal infection. Have you ever had a strep throat?
I don't remember.
Or a strep ear infection. It doesn't have to be recently. It could have been when he was 2 years old.
Right. But
sometimes the strep actually colonizes the nasopharynx, the passages up in there, and it doesn't go away. And it's a funny strep, and it has interaction with the immune system and the nervous system, and it causes an irritation that creates some anxiety and some changes in personality that might actually be associated with texture dislike. So I think that you need to get him evaluated by a doctor that can look deeper into this so we don't treat symptoms. Because I think there's something going on here. If he wasn't always avoiding these foods, something shifted. We need to find out what. That's the functional medicine way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
It's going to be a journey.
Do you have time for another question?
What's your other question?
Well, I have a lot of problems with muscle cramping in my calves mostly, and sometimes my feet. And I take magnesium, potassium, calcium, and I still have the problem. I know I sit for my job 8 to 10 hours a day. I try to get up, but do you have any other suggestions?
If you're doing those things already, cramping like this could be related to vascular disease. You could have venous or arterial peripheral vascular disease. Have you been evaluated for that?
Mm-hmm.
You have?
Okay.
Or have you been evaluated for that yet?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Do you have any other problems like diabetes or high blood pressure?
No.
Oh, good. Okay. So it could be that. It could also be that you maybe need some more movement. But I think when was the last time you actually saw your doctor about this leg cramp problem?
Probably the last time I saw him.
Okay. So I think if your pulses are good, this could still just be some just muscular problems. So dehydration can cause it. You still may need a little bit more magnesium. But if this is persistent despite doing those, I think it's worth it to get a vascular or neurologic evaluation because there's something going on here that's not controlled. Again, find out why.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right?
Okay. Thanks very much, Dr. Harvey. Have a great day.
You're very welcome. You too.
Thanks.
Yeah, we got DeAndre and Nancy on the line, but I think they'll wait for a second while I remind everybody that you're listening to Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. And you're invited to join in on the conversation by keeping your calls coming to 813-239-9663 or the emails to dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to DeAndre here. Good morning, DeAndre.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. I always appreciate this forum. I had an incident recently, and it has me wondering about diuretics. I had a really rough sinus infection. I was actually up in Wisconsin visiting with family, and basically that fire that was going on in Canada, that smoke was making its way down. I had my shots at this time. I also had been taking different vitamins like CoQ10 and different things, but that's semi-irrelevant. I had been trying a rigged version of something my ENT had prescribed, which is budesonide and saline to rinse my sinuses. Yeah. And, you do the little Afrin before that, because I have very bad upper respiratory issues, whether it's like based from food allergies and this and that. At any rate, I had food poisoning. I had some week-old Munster cheese and a couple sandwiches one night. And I was up for a while trying to deal with that. But in the process, like everything in my sinuses finally, like, had relieved themselves in a very, very strange way. Like, I felt I had been doing the regimen, a rigged version, because I wasn't using the vials that you mix in with the saline to then rinse through the sinuses after you do the Afrin and open everything up. I have to have the pump because I was out of insurance and they happened to sell budesonide over the counter. And at any rate, you know, I've been doing this off and on and getting some, you know, meager relief, you know, some general relief. There was still some swelling. Actually, it's come back to a little bit close to that degree, but I can still breathe through my nose okay. But after having, and I have a lot of, like, you know, gluten-like food allergies, but after, I think, like, you know, having that movement all that morning, I don't know, did I get rid of those offending nutrients or what have you in my digestive system or in my body? Because I heard you mention, like, pressure on the brain or inflammation in the brain, inflammation here, inflammation there, inflammation. And I felt like a brand new person after, you know, being, you know, those incidents, you know, culminated together the way they did. And I'm curious, like, are there, like, diuretics that might help remove some of that excess? Because my allergens are everywhere.
Diuretics don't treat nasal congestion. Several questions. One, do you avoid all your reactive food?
As well as I possibly can. I had intensely at that time, actually.
How about do you use a nasal douche, a neti pot, some sort of saline rinse?
I do sometimes, particularly when these things really ramp up.
Well, we're in ragweed and goldenrod season, so I would say every night before you go to bed, you should clean out the debris. You should have a HEPA filter in your house, in your bedroom, so that you can keep the particulates down there. Most people that have this ongoing problem are on other immune modifiers like antihistamines, the over-the-counter antihistamines, and also a prescriptive therapy that many ENT doctors and allergists use called Montelukast, which turns off a lot of that action. So there's a lot of possibilities there that it sounds like you could add in. Afrin.
One more thing I forgot to mention. After I felt the inflammation, like, disappear, like totally disappear, I had this mucus discharge for about 3 days, like nobody's business. It was tan to yellow, but really like tan, and it would just come out like all the time until, like, I felt like it would just, it just been held back there somewhere for so long, and it all just really, really come out.
Sounds like you had a violent reaction to that food poisoning that had your whole body react and just throw stuff off. Sometimes your immune system can do that kind of thing. So, give some of these other things a try that you've not been using. Talk to your ENT doctor, see if you can get a prescription for something that's a little bit more potent, and get yourself better, my friend.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely do. I'm going to be listening to the archives to get to get all this down. Thank you.
Have a great week.
You too.
Thanks.
And we got Nancy on the line from St. Pete. She has a question about neuropathy and alpha lipoic acid.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
My husband has neuropathy, and I've heard you say that alpha lipoic acid can reverse it. And I wondered how many cases you know of that have been reversed.
Quite a few in my practice and quite a few in the literature. So the question is, though, how early or late is the neuropathy? Early neuropathy responds much better to therapy than later neuropathy. So the key symptom here is if the feet are on fire and painful versus if they have no sensation. Where's your husband?
I think he's developing the no sensation.
But he still has pain?
But I know he has some kind of pain.
Oh, good. Okay. Not the good as pain. That means good that the nerves are still alive. So the alpha-lipoic acid dose that's in the literature is 1,200 to 1,800 milligrams a day for at least 3 months to see if there's going to be a change. But never alone, because methylcobalamin or methyl B12 and methylfolate or MTHF, as some people call it, those two vitamins are also shown to reverse it, as is another vitamin called benfotiamine. These are all well known to help with the nervous system recovery.
Okay.
And so I would do all of those for 3 months before making any decision about it. So 1,800 milligrams a day of alpha-lipoic acid and 2,000 micrograms a day of the B vitamins, the methyl B12 and methylfolate, seem to be very effective. And it would take at least 3 months to notice a shift, if not 6 months.
Oh.
Okay?
Yeah, I've been giving him like 600, I think.
That's good. Good start. Triple it and add the B vitamins.
I also had a question about arthritis. What kind of tests do you do to find out what's causing inflammation?
Oh, a variety of them, depending on the person's history. We might look at simply the autoimmune panel, but we might want to look at toxins, gastrointestinal issues, because there are bacteria in the gut that can induce autoimmune disease. Yeast can promote more inflammation. Parasites can do a similar thing, so we need to look at that. We want to look at food sensitivity sometimes.
Food sensitivities are more important?
Well, food allergies are not important in arthritis, because food allergies are ones where you eat strawberries and you get hives, or you take a peanut and you stop breathing and die. Those are allergies.
I'm allergic to tomatoes, and they give me terrible arthritis.
Okay, well, that's a different concept, too. The allergy to tomato, where you get hives and trouble breathing?
Well, I never get hives, but I sure get joint pain.
Okay, so that's not an allergy. That's actually a sensitivity. And it could either be you're sensitive to the chemical in the nightshade tomato, which is a strychnine-like molecule, or you could actually be having a problem with food sensitivity, or you could be having a reaction to another food chemical called a lectin, which also irritates people with arthritis. So there's a variety of different ways tomatoes could do that, but it doesn't sound like you have a tomato allergy.
Well, it did come up in the skin tests, sensitivity, not in the blood test.
Okay, good. So that means you have a bit of a tomato allergy, plus you have a reaction to tomatoes in the arthritis sense, because usually allergies don't induce arthritis.
Oh, I was under the impression they did because of the tomato thing. Because a doctor in Hawaii said that 99% of his patients were cured of rheumatoid arthritis by eliminating the nightshade family.
I've never seen that in my practice. That's pretty good. That's a pretty amazing number.
Yeah, I read that in Prevention Magazine back in the 70s.
Yeah. I've applied that principle that most people don't get cured of their arthritis with avoiding nightshade, but they do feel better.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. And I got Gwendolyn from Tampa with the question of how often should one get tested for COVID?
Yes. Hi, Gwendolyn.
Hi. I was tested for COVID last year in November and again this year in August. And I was wondering, is that too far apart? You know, to be tested.
Are you talking about getting a nasal swab to see if you actually have COVID?
I don't have COVID.
Test?
Each time was negative.
So I don't understand. What are you getting these tests for, and what kind of test? A nasal swab or a blood test?
Oh, the nasal swab.
And so you were exposed, and so you went to get tested to make sure you didn't have it?
Yeah.
Okay. So the only time you want to go and get tested with a nasal swab is if you've been exposed and think you have it, or if you have symptoms and think you have it. There's no other reason to go and get a nasal swab. And so not that I can see, unless there is one other reason, and that is if you have not been vaccinated and you actually are in the public, you might want to get a weekly test to make sure that you're not walking around infected.
Yeah.
And that's about the only other reason I could see.
Okay, that's great. That's great, Dr. Fred. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we're down to about 10 minutes here. We have May from Dunedin.
Hello, May. Actually, it's Mary, but that's cool.
Hey, Mary.
Yeah. I had, well, of course, they shut the hospitals down before they could cut my breast tumor out last year. Elective surgery, you know. But, and then I did 20 weeks of chemo. The first 2 months were Red Devil, and the rest was whatever. 20 weeks. And got neuropathy really bad. They've got me on gabapentin, but I know that's just a Band-Aid.
No, it's not even a Band-Aid. It's not a treatment. It just basically dulls your brain so you forget that you have neuropathy.
Right. Well, I couldn't understand what you were telling that other woman about it's what to take for neuropathy.
Yeah, alpha-lipoic acid, A-L-T-H-A.
Can you slow down?
A-L-T-H-A. L-I-P-O-I-C.
E-O-I-C. Okay.
So alpha-lipoic, that is an acid, 600 milligrams 2 to 3 times a day with food. And then methyl, M-E-T-H-Y-L,
B-12. Oh, whoa, this neuropathy, I can't wrap this.
M-E-T-H-Y-L, and that's folate and B-12. So those are the major ones that help the neuropathy.
Okay, I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Mary.
Bye-bye.
And in the lightning round here, let's go to Gregory.
Hello, Gregory.
Yes, hello. I had a question about migraines, headaches. I have had a couple closed head injuries, and I suffer from migraines, and I didn't know if there was medication that you could recommend. I'm just trying a new medication, and I'm prone to seizures, so I'll hang up and wait for your response.
Okay. I don't have any medications to recommend. Because I'm not going to treat that way. He just got started with a new medication. So what I would suggest, though, is that craniosacral therapy is a very, very gentle way of manipulating the head and neck that may actually relieve the pressure that was caused by closed head injuries. Closed head injuries are very interesting and cause a lot of difficulties. So I would get some craniosacral therapy because it's low risk and you're already trying a new medication. Jeff has asked if Delta might have reached the peak, and honestly, it seems like it could have here, but it may not. We just have to keep watching. We're coming into winter. Flu may show up. I see very few people wearing masks these days, so we're going to have to pay attention to what happens in these next couple of months.
And I've got Diane here from Tampa. What have you got for us, Diane, today?
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Hey. Harvey, for being here and sharing. I have Hashimoto, and asking my doctor to run certain tests that she doesn't seem to think is necessary. One is cortisol, and she wants to do the blood, and I don't know the difference between the blood cortisol or the saliva.
The blood cortisol you get drawn maybe once a day, maybe twice a day. The saliva gives you the full day's course, so you can actually watch the way your adrenals respond to the day. So you get a more comprehensive adrenal evaluation by doing the saliva one than you do a spot morning cortisol.
That's what I was wondering, what the difference in the results would be.
Yes. So, yeah, you get to see more functional results with the saliva.
Okay. And I'm on Curasent.
I'm sorry? And
I'm on Curasent, thyroid replacement.
Oh, Curasent, yeah.
Yeah. After a month, it stopped working. I'm wondering T3 supplementation might be needed.
That could be. I would get a doctor to do a full thyroid panel and check your total T3, your reverse T3, your free T4, and your TSH, and see where you're standing on that. And also, you might want to do the four-point adrenal because they work together and see what's going on. Maybe the thyroid is working and the adrenals are off.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye. Now it's gone dark here on the phone lines, and we got about 5 more minutes, so why don't you read a couple of emails for us?
Very good. Jean asks, can I recommend a good doctor to help me with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth? The gastroenterologist diagnosed it several years ago, but it returned. He retired. He needs a new doctor, and a naturopath would be okay, but he wants an insurance doctor. So not really sure about where you might find a doctor to accept insurance, because I don't pay attention to that. But a good doctor to help with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth can be a gastroenterologist. But also, I think functional medicine doctors do a great job with that. And actually, I don't know where Bonnie is, so I would suggest that she go on to IFM, that's I, and then F as in Fred, M as in Mary, .org, and go to the physician search and find one of the local doctors. I think it would be a great idea.
And this may be one of our last calls. We've got Mike from Tampa here asking where to get free health care.
Hello, Mike.
Yes, sir. My question, and more specifically, is I believe I need some sort of ADHD medication, and I cannot afford to go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, whichever one I'm supposed to go to. But is there any kind of free clinic somewhere I can go that I can at least find out if I do actually need this medication?
The Sarasota Memorial Hospital, I know, has a free or open clinic. I don't know of anyone else in the area. I'm not aware of it. There are some mental health outreach programs that you might want to check for. But honestly, no, I don't really know. A suggestion, though, for someone who has these kind of symptoms, get on fish oil, 4,000 milligrams of EPA DHA a day. Eliminate gluten, sugar, artificial ingredients, artificial sweeteners, artificial flavors, artificial colors, processed foods, and yes, all gluten and all dairy, commercial dairy. And I think that your brain will improve. Oh, also get rid of caffeine.
Yeah, actually, I got rid of all those things except, and I haven't tried fish oil yet. I definitely will give that a shot.
Very important stuff. But then again, you still may need to get something more. So, yeah, check out some of the outreaches around.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's down to just under 3 minutes. So, and I've got nobody here on the lines anyway, so I think it's a good time to wrap up with some of the emails. What have you got?
Yeah, this is an excellent question here. Does alpha-lipoic acid cause hair loss? Not directly, but it actually could. And it's because it may actually have you overutilize biotin, which is crucial for making hair. So the alpha-lipoic acid preparation that I use, called ALA Max CR, has biotin added. So I would recommend anybody taking the protocols that I just recommended to please take extra biotin if your preparation doesn't have biotin, because that will help actually with very good collagen production. Protein, because I recommend a protein powder. So there's really good organic cross-filtered, cold-filtered whey proteins out there, many vegan plant proteins, quite a variety of them. Look for organic and have at it. I don't have any other real specific recommendations for brands because there's a lot of good ones. So
you have been listening.
Are we moving on? I have no audio. So, shall I keep talking next week?
Oh, I thought I had the music playing underscoring here. But, yeah, we're wrapping on up. And I know that next week that you're going to be in the air at this time. So we'll be playing an encore presentation.
Yes, in the air, not on the air.
Yes, there you go. And I'd like to thank you for a great show today there, Dr. Fred.
Thank you for your very good co-hosting, and thanks, Clark, for taking those phone calls.
She's always good at that, and I'd like to thank everyone for calling on in and helping us with this show. So from everyone here at WMNF Tampa, until next Monday at 10 o'clock, I want to thank you, Dr. Harvey, and all of our listeners, and take care and stay healthy.
And you.